All right, welcome to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Dan Fernandez, and our guest here is...
I'm Joe Nalewabell.
And Joe, who are you and what do you do?
Well, I've been at Microsoft 10 years.
Yeah.
I used to be, well, I've had a number of firsts.
Okay.
I was the first compiler PM for C#.
All right.
I did that job for a while, so I did that for about 4 or 5 years.
And that's where we started working.
That's
where your hatred grew for me, yeah.
That's true.
Okay.
The RSS screensavers.
Yes.
I remember the battles over that.
Yes, good old Luke Hoban pulling it out.
That's right.
Actually doing work instead of email.
And despite my discouragement of that particular project.
Yes.
So I did that for 4 or 5 years on the C# team. I did a lot of stuff there, was the GPM there for a while. Decided I needed a break, went down to Xbox and actually started the... XNA Game Studio product with Boyd down there.
Yes.
So went down and joined the entertainment division.
Yes.
Did stuff there. Came back to DevDiv for a while and worked on our Azure tools. So I was there. It was released at PDC this year.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the tools we have in VS around targeting the cloud.
Our cloud tools, yeah.
That's right. And now I'm in China. So I'm based in Shanghai, working there as the GPM, working on the different groups that we have there.
Okay, so what happens in DevDiv China?
We have about 6 teams delivering different parts of technology back to DevDiv, ranging from low-level type stuff, from CLR interop. We have a C++ linker team. And then we have all the way up to sort of like team arc. We have a couple of designers there. We also have all the data functionality, so a lot of the data source window, drag and drop to forms and stuff. We own that as well. We also own parallel tools.
Excellent.
So some of the debugger profiler, and I shouldn't forget the WinForms team. So we own WinForms as well.
Oh, yes.
So a bunch of different
things. So a lot of different technologies in DevDiv.
Yep. That's what
cool.
We do.
Cool. Now, today is...
Wait, I thought you said you were going to talk about why I'm here and how I got to be here.
Oh, yes. So you're here, and you're being nice to be on the show because you thought you were going to come in to watch a show. I thought you were going to come in to be a guest on the show.
And... How long did I get the deck for?
A couple hours before.
Ah, yes. You will be buying drinks next week in Las Vegas.
Yes, Joe will be at Mix, so I will be buying him drinks. Now, speaking of other things that we're supposed to go on, Jason Dean had emailed us because it is Red Nose Day on Friday. I guess it's Friday the 13th.
Right.
So we have our 9 guy who has a red nose, but Jason's red nose, he sent us red nose because I was going to force you to even wear red nose.
Oh, even better.
Yeah. They did not arrive.
Well, actually, Red Nose Day is something I'm used to because we're in Australia, we have it, and it's for charity, and so you do buy things like that red nose that the lady's wearing there and stick it on, and I have worn one of those on public transport.
Really?
To go to work, yeah. So support the charities.
Yeah, so this is a good thing, and there's a lot of, I'm sure, UK Niners, so hopefully they can participate. And
maybe some Australian Niners.
Yeah, exactly. There probably is a lot of them, actually.
There is.
Full show, getting to some of the bigger announcements, SQL Server Data Services. So what's this about?
So the SQL Server team, they have the data services in the cloud. They had an interface before, which was just REST and SOAP APIs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was a lot of people asking about when can I use SQL Server in the cloud. The SQL Server, I suppose, the functionality that they're used to. And so they've announced that the cloud services now will actually support the TDS protocol. So a lot of the things that
TDS is?
I actually don't know. I just know
Tabular Data Stream.
Well, there you go.
See, I thought you... Okay.
No, I just know that there's so many acronyms. How many?
Yeah.
So that's supporting that stream so people can, you know, I suppose, connect up and use a lot of the database functionality that they're used to. I think you connect up with just a different connection string, right?
Yeah, so I think this is like the cool part, I think, about the announcement is the goal is to support, you know, tables, stored procedures, triggers, everything a normal database would have. It just happens to be hosted in the cloud.
Right.
I change my connection string and I go from SQL Express to SQL in the cloud and it just works. That's huge.
That is it. It's fantastic. I think a lot of people were, the REST and the SOAP API make a good thing for a lot of developers. But I think you know, if you're taking your existing code or existing functionality and want to see what it works like in the cloud, it's a great thing.
Yeah, and I can imagine them like adding support for Management Studio, so you can like use their tools and utilities to manage your database in the cloud, much the same way.
Right.
So this is very cool, and I think very big. So speaking of data, this is Greg Duncan, and kind of harkens me back to some of our PopFly days, but what they did is they had a ton of data that they actually are making online for free. So this is everything from education levels in states to military spending to anything you can imagine. The Guardian, which is a UK newspaper, right? And I'm sure it's a multinational. But all the stuff's available for free. It's using Google Spreadsheets, but at least that has a REST API, so developers can actually build mashups and say, you know, this president versus education levels, and you know, do the.
It's all UK data, right?
No, it's US too.
Oh, US? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be good, I suppose, too, with the new administration saying that they're going to add a lot of data and make it transparent. Hopefully, they'll put APIs on them too. So.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be great to actually see. You know, I think the interesting part is to do the correlations of, you know, like pet neutering and, like, you know, budget deficits, and it's like, wow, geez.
So you think the Freakonomics book now, they're going to have a lot more people that'll be able to, like, you know,
yeah, actually, that was a great book. So.
That was a very good book.
Yeah.
See, even though I'm based in China, I know what's going on.
Now, some of the other stuff, in talking about freebies, do you want to talk about this? I'll get you with
sure,
your mouthful.
So this is Scott Gu, because he doesn't have enough to do in his time.
Yes.
I mean, as most VPs do, they're moonlighting, writing books and that sort of stuff. So Scott's written, the first chapter of this book, the ASP.NET MVC 1.0 book. And I think part of the deal, I think he says in the blog post, was he was able to take that chapter and make it available as a free download. I actually have it in my laptop at the moment, meaning to read it. So it's basically, I think his dinner, nerd dinner?
Yes, nerd dinner. I think it's nerd dinner now or something like that.
And so it's a way of basically showing you how to actually use MVC in probably the Scott Gu approved way.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic that it's available and free too. I mean, the books are great anyway, but it's nice to be able to, you know, have a look at it. And,
yeah, so and a lot of people.
It's not a short chapter either. Did you see the page count?
185, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's Scott, if you're familiar with Scott Guthrie's tutorials, like, they're very screenshot heavy, very step by step. This book is exactly like that.
Right.
Now, what'll be interesting to see is actually if the book ends up being in color or not. Because I really like the PDF download because everything's in color.
Oh, yeah.
So, and even the code samples are in color. So, I don't know if the book will be.
You need that colorizing in the book?
I do. So, I got spoiled with Adam Nathan's WPF Unleashed.
Right.
Where it was colorized. It's so much easier to scan code with colors.
I didn't think about that. So, it's easy to scan it?
It really is. Hmm. So, I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but I love the colorization. And if you look at the comments on Adam's book, everybody's like, oh my God, I love the color, I love the color, I love the color. So
there we go. We'll see. Yeah, and I think it's kind of interesting that Scott, I mean, I think he says in the blog there that it was like, oh, you know, that's why he hasn't been blogging so much. I don't really buy that from Scott.
Yeah. He doesn't have enough with his kid, actually, so.
And we just had our mid-year reviews, too, so, you know, like, it's not like we would have been busy with any of that stuff as well, so.
I had talked to him the day before this was, actually, the day this got sent to the printers, and he was like, yeah, I was up till like 4 a.m. getting the final things in. So it still hadn't gone to the. In fact, I think he talks about it, like, some of the reviewers and, like, for editors still need to go through it and stuff, but they put it up really early.
That's
so,
great.
That should be on a big purchase list.
You know, Scott always makes me feel bad. It makes me feel like I should be doing more at work.
He really is, like, three people, right? So he just has, like, one person on the blog,
right.
One person, you know, just doing product features, another one being, like, a VP.
And, you know, like, sometimes you see some output from people and you think, oh, you know, it's been ghostwritten by somebody, or, you know, like, that's not really them. Scott, that's him.
Without a doubt, it's him.
It's
now, talking about social networks.
Oh, social networks, one of my favorite things.
Yes, so this is a tutorial step-by-step on how, if you wanted to build a social network using ASP.NET, like, you have user profiles, friends can see it, you can do search for friends, you become friends with somebody, you can see the linkages between friends, all those features and even things like status updates, step by step how to build it using ASP.NET. Now, so, you're very opinionated when it comes to social networks.
I'm just saying, I was telling you before, I have deleted my Facebook profile.
Yes, I don't know how you can do that.
Oh, it's easy. Actually, you just say delete, and you actually don't have to ring up anybody, which was kind of amazing. You don't have to ring up and opt out. But I loved, actually, the opt-out process since Facebook. Since you've never done it, you wouldn't have never seen it.
No.
So you click, there are a bunch of buttons, and you say, I want to delete my account, and it's like, do you really want to, all that sort of stuff. And when you get to the final page, they randomly pick four of your friends and put their pictures up, and they say, they will miss you.
Aww.
Before you
That's
hit delete.
Awesome.
Before you hit delete.
You probably saw, like, me and you were like, delete. That's awesome.
No, so, I'm just trying to how many social networks do we need?
I'm a big believer in social networks, man. I love social networks. Whether it's Facebook or even applying the same themes of social networks to other areas that are, I guess, inefficient, either communication channels or collaboration channels, right?
How many social networks are you on?
It really depends on how you count social networks, right? So I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter. Do you count Channel 9 as a social network?
Well, you've built your own social network there, right?
Yeah, yeah. We had to build our own. If only we had this article.
Xbox Live.
Steam is another one where, I think Steam is a really interesting one where it takes, and Xbox Live, the same thing. You have this core foundational service that provides social networks for games across them. So if my friend's playing Unreal Tournament or somebody else playing something like that, I can actually see what they're doing, connect with them, send them messages.
I think
that
it's
stuff's
just,
great.
Well, I'm just worried, like, there's so many social networks. How do you keep track of everything, right? And then
yes.
that builds the social network tracker.
Yes.
Know, that, you know, like, you want to track everything, like, what's going on in my Xbox Live community and all that sort of stuff. I think there's a limit to the number of social networks. Now, you know me, I try to minimize the number
yes.
of social networks.
Yes.
You know, so I think it's great that someone's built that. I just worry that there's too many social networks out there.
So there you go. We have...
That's me.
Yes.
Is there a social network for people who build RSS screensavers?
There needs to be a social network for RSS enablers. That's what we are.
That's
so.
Right.
So speaking of web apps, Brad Abrams, and you met with Brad earlier, right?
I'm actually here for a week, so I was meeting with a bunch of different people, and Brad was one of the people I caught up with. So.
Yeah, so this is a Channel 9 video you guys should take a look at, and it's the Knowledge Chamber. Brad goes through some of the new stuff that he can still talk about because this is before there's a number of announcements coming at Mix, but he talks about some of the things for making business applications.
Right.
So this is like validating data. This is things like deep linking, so you can have a URL so you don't have to say click here to get at a URL, and some of the more business-oriented things when you're building like intranet applications using Silverlight.
Right, and this is clearly a big focus for Silverlight and the... And, you know, like, how do we take the line of business apps and make it available? And I can't say much more because I'm kind of, like, working on parts of it, so.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't.
Until Mix.
I know a code name that you're working on that we
That's
can't
true.
Talk about.
That's
yeah.
true.
So speaking of cool examples, and this is, you know, you had your rant on social networks. My rant on books for Silverlight and WPF, they talk about how you can build beautiful applications. Take the entire shelf of 20 books, flip through them, and look for one example of a beautiful application. You won't find them. They don't teach you how to build even like passably nice graphics. I love and I'm friends with several of the people that write these books.
That's because we're developers.
But if the technology is designed to build beautiful applications and you teach them how to build like red and green buttons...
Well,
next
and
to each
then,
other,
and then
like
say,
it's
leave,
just,
and then a design is left for homework.
It's yeah, like, yeah, it's like, come on, if it really is that easy,
exercise left for the reader.
Exercise left for the reader to use the most. The reason this platform That's exists
true.
Is to make beautiful applications. We're not going to show you how. We're not even going to show you what the kind of things you can do are. Here's a really ugly red button that I'm now going to spin.
And you could template it,
yes.
but we won't show you how.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So. So that's my point and why I think this is a good example in that it is a nice, attractive application. And this was originally done in Ziming Zhu, Dr. Z, from who actually is an architect evangelist in D.C., posted this up to Codeplex and rebuilt the app for, this was Silverlight 1, now it's on Silverlight 2.
I'm really sympathetic.
And C-sharp?
I am, well, C-sharp, of course.
There you go.
I'm very sympathetic to that because I understand, like, when I work down in Xbox, you're surrounded, there's a whole bunch of people that are just designers. That's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you see the effect that a designer can have on whether it's a prototype or whether it's like the code, you look at the new Xbox shell experience, that you can see designers in there and it makes it everything so much better.
Yeah.
And so you're right. You sort of like want to be able to show you like what you can do. And actually, I saw a Channel 9 episode while I was on the bus in Shanghai. And I think one of the teams was talking about a deep zoom thing. I think it was one of the... Oh, I've forgotten the name. But the interesting thing was they're releasing all the code, but all the design assets as well.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so that's an important thing, right? If we're going to show the samples, right, we normally always show the code off.
Yes.
But then where's all the design assets? Where's all the, you know, the Photoshop,
and XNA is
all that sort of stuff.
XNA is a great example where it's like, man, yeah, I can build a 3D game, except I have no 3D textures. I've never used, you know, 3D Studio Max or anything like that. And I think the great thing is you guys did a partnership where you could actually have a set of free online assets for people. Like, we got to do that for Windows apps, even Windows icons or you know, clip art.
It's the new version of clip art, man. We need nice designer friendly or, you know, stuff that looks nice.
Yeah, give us stuff that looks nice that we can then take and riff and then rebuild the guts of.
Right.
And that's my bitch point. And I'm losing my voice because I've been screaming earlier this week, but that's a different story. So speaking of code examples.
I respect university, don't
worry. Thank you. CodeBox.
Mm.
So this is a code project example, and the goal is to make a fast text box control for WPF. So if you need syntax colorization, you need all the implementation details of building a rich text control already there. So changing fonts, changing colors, bold, italics, all that stuff. It's built for you.
That's fantastic. You know, but I have to, whenever I see something that says fast text box, I always wonder, like, is there a slow mode?
Yes.
Has somebody got an alternative project that's the slow text box?
I'm sure there probably is, like, a slow motion one.
No, this stuff's really important, and I'm glad someone's done it. I'm a little surprised we didn't do it, but...
Yeah, you know, a lot of times it's like we will give you people, like,
we
nails
have
and wood and say, look, you can make a house. It's like, why not give them a bathroom or something?
Yeah, but having been on the product side, I also understand sometimes why we don't do that.
So. True. And speaking of more code for .NET developers, Yohai from the who's a Windows evangelist, technical evangelist on Windows in our team, just published 3 sets of .NET wrappers. So the goal here is to have managed libraries for getting sensors and location from Win7, taskbar, so jump lists, the thumbnail previews, the
changes things.
Yeah, changing the icon, so if you've seen IE, it starts downloading, it starts filling with the green bar.
That is a fantastic feature, by the way.
Yeah.
So you don't have to keep flipping back to those windows, you can just look down and see it.
Yeah, it's kind of like that's so nice the first time you see it. And even touch, right? So touch enabling, all that stuff is available as native APIs. Now he's built a set of wrappers to make it easier for .NET developers to reuse.
So remember, Yohai did a bunch of videos, right, with the developers using the native APIs.
Yes.
So now I'll have to do a bunch of videos with the native, the .NET managed APIs.
I think he needs to, yeah. And me, I'm spoiled, and I know we were talking about this before, is I get fearful when I see a native API. I just can't handle it anymore.
I know. I'm like that too. I mean, like, I come from the C# world now, so I'm like, if it's not managed, there's not much I can do with it. I know as a past C++ programmer, I know it's very sad to say, but I'm like, I need the .NET wrapper. So I'm glad, because I wanted to play with a lot of that stuff and try it out. And so it's nice that there's some .NET wrappers now.
Yeah, and everything's available, source code's available, so cool stuff. And white papers as well. So speaking of other examples, this is Muhammad Ashraful Alam, hope I got his name right. And we've talked about him before on the show, but he did a new plugin for VSTS, and this is, you know, our build engine. We are going to run a team, a load test, and wanted to email the results to, say, our virtual team for, hey, Channel 9's performance sucks, you know, this week, for example.
Twitter. How is Twitter going?
Yeah, you can do a distributed denial of service attack using load test.
Well, you know, when I saw this, I thought, you know, and I spoke to you earlier about this, so like email reporter, like email seems so old now.
Yeah.
We should be Twittering the... I mean, if you're saying that right, is it tweet?
Tweet.
We should tweet it.
Yes,
I want to make sure I'm getting the right words, right?
So you could actually have, extend this application... where it does the SMTP call and said switch it out for, you know, to send to Twitter. So that way you can actually, have like almost like a bot on Twitter and ask the bot, hey, how's our load test doing? And it can send you back jumbles.
Maybe then we could also combine that with that previous project. So the TFS servers, they could create their own social network.
Yeah, they're all friends.
Yes, they are.
The dev servers
That's right.
Staging.
There is no end to the social networks you can create.
Do you see how much inefficiencies there are?
Better together.
Yes.
Better together.
Yes.
Right.
No one's buying it. so one of the follow-ups here. This is Joseph Flukiger, I hope I got his name right.
I'm letting you do the one.
Yeah, probably for the best. Now, we had talked about this in our one-year birthday when Scott Hanselman was here, how old school it was to think about RAM disks. But Joseph actually goes through and does a performance test on RAM disks versus regular Visual Studio, and RAM disks don't actually speed up Visual Studio. So they do very little in terms of milliseconds, that it really doesn't matter, and you have to copy your project in and out of the RAM disk,
right.
So it really isn't worth it.
That's kind of old school, isn't it, the RAM disk?
Yeah, it's like, you know, 1985 kind of stuff. But thank you, Joseph, for actually doing the work and verifying that it's a vicious rumor.
Do you want me to tell the secret?
Yeah, go ahead.
There's nothing you can do to speed up Visual Studio. No, and it's so...
you guys, you know, burned in governors?
Special code in there to do it.
That checks and makes sure nothing is trying to optimize?
That's right. We, you know, snuff that out. Like, running on RAM disk, oh, we got you now.
Yeah. So. I was sending an alert to your manager.
No, I shouldn't
You're tweeting
say that.
It.
Tweeting it? That's right. I shouldn't say that.
No. But I'd actually love to see Visual Studio examples of compiling large software projects on different machines, because I've seen friends' machines compile the same project orders of magnitude faster. Get, like, Jeff Atwood or Scott Hanselman or somebody to just come through with, like, this Dell, this HP, and have them come through, and which one's actually faster.
Maybe the product marketer in you, or the past product marketer in you, could actually go and we could do a deal with all the manufacturers. The Visual Studio.
Yeah,
you know, we have the XPS gaming laptops.
It's like the Consumer Reports. They, like, build their test. It would be like Visual Studio test for small, medium, and large projects and actually show the speed.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a business opportunity for you. Yeah. So, picks of the week.
That's right. So, coming from the XNA team.
Yes.
And I would like to say, can I show my last little...
Now, why do you have this?
My Zune was... Yes. Unfortunately, I live and breathe by my Zune. In Shanghai, because I listen to a lot of stuff on my commute. And so I'm walking down the street on the weekend, have my hands full of something, and my Zune just stops. I don't hear anything. And I'm like, well, what happened there? And so I look down, I've got my headphones on, and I look down, and there's the cable going down, no Zune. And I'm like, well, I must have dropped it. So I look down at the street, I'm looking around, oh no, it's been stolen out of my pocket while I'm listening to it. So I'm kind of like a little sad about the fact that I've, you know, obviously I've lost my Zune, but I'm kind of impressed by the fact that someone can pickpocket me while I'm wearing the Zune.
That's pretty hardcore.
Right. So I told my tale of woe to the XNA team. Michael Klucher down there.
Who we mentioned on the show before.
And then I think he actually gave me a Zune.
Yeah.
But it has very special XNA markings on it.
Yeah.
So
that is very cool.
I don't know whether Michael should have done that, so he may be in trouble right now. But I haven't.
What's important is we identified him. Great.
Right. So a big part of the pick of the week here is that I can't remember what is the... Do you remember the person's name?
I don't off the top of my head.
Okay,
Andre?
Andre, yeah. It'll be in the links anyway.
Yes, yeah.
So Andre has written a very comprehensive sort of like designer environment that sits inside Visual Studio that allows you to graphically design elements of an XNA game.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things you'll know now that if you're writing an XNA game, we have really no designer support. It's, you know, we have a great content build system, we have code, but really how you organize your code and how you organize the transitions between screens and all that sort of stuff, you need to do in code.
Right.
Well, here is an actual visual designer that allows you to control a lot of the interactions that happen between the screens, the code in a visual way inside Visual Studio, and actually spits out code to, you know, handle the transitions for you. So I actually can't wait to actually load this up and try it out.
Yeah, I think the cool part, too, is like everything from mapping the X input stuff, where it's like, okay, how do you want the controllers to do? It's all visual. It really is probably one of the cooler Visual Studio extensions I've ever seen.
Sure, yeah.
And it's free, too.
Yeah, and it's open source, I think, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's unbelievable, really, that designer integration, the thing with the controller.
Yeah, nice. So very cool stuff.
Yeah.
So good pick. And my pick, this is actually... came to us via email. I think it was Richards was his last name. I think it's Andrew Richards. I think it is. And Lewis Hamilton is the driver here. But we'll actually go to a clip. But these guys had done a video on YouTube of them racing a grand, like a mini Grand Prix car. They got contacted by an actual Grand Prix race team and had a professional driver, Lewis Hamilton, actually take and drive the car with a cell phone. So we will...
That's very James Bond.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, actually, to see that they got contacted and then got to go to the actual raceway. So we will see it after the clip.
Lappy Storm. Here it is.
Yeah, well, we've created an application there.
Yes.
Stick in.
That is.
There you see, now show what it can do.
Okay.
Okay. Nice. So we've replaced the radio receiver in the car with a Bluetooth receiver.
Ah, look at it go. It's good control.
What?
What's this then, Si?
Well, we're in the office on a weekend to do some important work on this. The Office Grand Prix! Wow.
Ta-da!
A lot of time and effort went into that.
Lots.
Exciting comment.
Yes, from McLaren on here. Look, hello, Fastlane Steve. Brilliant work on the track there. We'd like to talk to you about it all. Get in touch with us to discuss it further.
They sent Steve out and we had a little chat and they said, what have you got going with this? The test back in
This is Ben, my new best friend.
Hi, Simon.
Tell him what you've done.
So we've done what you do, but in a bigger scale, really. Picked up the Bluetooth parameters to the car, hopefully with a little bit of left steer, and a little bit of right steer, move. We can change up the gears, and down the gears. Feasibly, you could drive the car.
Oh, that's so cool.
There's the main man.
Lewis Hamilton.
Somebody tweeted that. Did they tweet it?
I'm sure they did. So thank you, Joe, for...
That's right. You're buying next week?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Right.